supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Bonjour and welcome to You Bet Your Garden from Philadelphia. Unfortunately, not Paris, where I just got back from 2 weeks. So if my brain's a little foggy, it's because it's at a sidewalk cafe, cats and kittens, or should I say, chats and chatons. Anyway, we got a great show for you. We're going to talk about how you can fix your lawn this season, what to do if your lawn isn't draining properly, and take lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Andy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Well, thank you for making it, Andy. Where are you, sir?
Equality, Alabama.
What can we do for Equal Andy from Alabama?
I run a little organic garden for the Spring House restaurant, and my chef, Rob McDaniel, there right near Lake Martin, shameless plug there, wants me to grow everything organically, and I'm having trouble with beetles eating my eggplant.
Right.
And I've had a lot of ants. I don't really know if I need to worry about them or not. So I wonder if you could just kind of give me a rundown on the best organic insecticides, neem oil. Do I have to wash it off after I've done it? What about other insecticidal oils? I saw some on Gardens Alive.
Well, what kind of restaurant is this?
Well, it's a high-end, locally sourced restaurant right close to Lake Martin.
So just mixed cuisine?
Mixed cuisine, but mostly plants.
When I think of a restaurant, I think the biggest things that they want to grow for themselves are salad greens and their own herbs. And so that's a can of corn, because these are plants that we don't want to pollinate. We don't want them to set flower and create fruit. So one-stop shopping with them is take a look at different row cover designs. They have row covers that are equipped with their own tunnels, if you know what I mean. They already come with the hoops. You just stretch them out. You grow the plants inside them. Completely protects them from insect invasion, but it lets all the light and air and water through that the plants need.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned flea beetles on eggplant, and man, that is a nemesis. That is a fiend of everyone who's grown eggplant. These tiny little beetles that are almost impossible to see, that are about the size of fleas, and they leave all these little shotgun-like holes in the in the leaves of the eggplant. Now, where do you get your eggplant plants?
Well, Rob ordered these from an organic specialty place. They're called Fairy Tale Eggplant. They're really pretty.
Right. Oh, no, I know the variety, and they come in at like 6 weeks of age?
Yes, and we've gotten a lot of eggplants off of them.
One thing you want to do with eggplant, even in your climate, it takes a long time for eggplant to produce fruits. So what you want to arrange with the grower who's providing you the plants, tell them to hold on to the plants until they're like 8 or 10 weeks old and bigger. They'll charge you a little bit more, but they're in a situation in greenhouses and stuff where they know how to control all these pests. Then when they get to you, because eggplants just take forever to put on biomass, when they get to you, they'll have a decent size. And the bigger they are, the less damage these flea beetles do. Then I would also suggest growing them under row covers until the flowers form. But then you have to remove the covers so the eggplant can be pollinated.
Right.
But by then, again, they're pretty big and they can take care of themselves. I'll tell you an old Italian trick for flea beetles is to dust a little bit of wood ash onto the leaves of the plants. It gives it a gritty feeling. So you could do the same thing with a product called diatomaceous earth, which looks like a white powder, but it's actually the prehistoric remains of fossilized sea diatoms. And on a microscopic level, it's very sharp, so the beetles can't handle that. The bottom line is row covers are going to do a lot for you. Working with bigger plants are going to do a lot for you. And then I want you to make sure you have a hose with really good water pressure and a nozzle you can set to a really intense setting, like it stings your hand. And then when you have insects show up, cradle the plant in one hand and blast them off with sharp streams of water. You can
I've been doing that.
You can do that every morning, but it has to be sharp, not a little shower. You've really got to give them a whacking. You know, we used to have a saying back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening that water is the best insecticide.
Well, that's a lot of great ideas.
All right, Andy, we'll be expecting a free dinner when we get to Equality, Alabama on our world tour.
Okay, the restaurant is located on Russell's Crossroads, right near Lake Martin.
We will expect fine service, Andy.
It's really good.
Okay, take care, man.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Tom, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Well, thank you for being had, Tom. Where are you, man?
I'm in Oklahoma City.
One of our favorite places. What can we do for Tom in Oklahoma now?
I have a small greenhouse in my backyard. It is about 560 square feet.
Right.
I use it to winter over my succulents and my tropicals.
Right.
Last year, before I moved anything into the greenhouse, I gave it a high-powered jet spray with a hose, moved everything into the greenhouse, and over the winter, the aphids invaded, and the aphids destroyed a couple of duranthas, they destroyed my abutilons, they destroyed a couple of hibiscus plants, and I want to try to do a better job this year and prepare for the aphid invasion.
I tell you, if I am not methodical about spraying those plants down with sharp streams of water, I always wind up with aphids. For instance, right now in Oklahoma, you got nothing in the greenhouse, right, Tom?
That is correct.
And do you have it closed up?
No, it is open.
Close that thing up and let it cook in the Oklahoma sun. That's one of the best things you can do with a greenhouse in the summertime when it's too hot for plants, is you can literally just close it up and let it sterilize itself so there's nothing left alive. Any aphids that come in are coming in on your plants. So what I do is I set up three stations. I either pot the plants up or I take the potted plants and I take them down near the hose. I set the hose nozzle to the sharpest spray. I cradle the plant with one hand, and then I just shoot water all over every nook and cranny. I don't care if I blow off some flowers. The plant doesn't mind. Then I move that plant to the in-between area, do another plant until I've done all of my plants once. Then I move the hose over to the second area, and I give them another good one. After I do the second time, I wait like 24 hours, then I get the greenhouse open, and right outside the door, every plant gets a final spray, including the pot. This is where you want to have a wet rag with maybe some vinegar on it even, and you want to wipe down the rim of the pot and all of the outside of the pot. Then you take each plant individually inside the greenhouse. And especially early on, you keep a real eye out. If you start to see aphids on any of your plants, take them outside, give them a good treatment. Now, if you want to go for the gold, there's two other things you can do. One is really easy. One is yellow sticky traps. And these are just big yellow rectangles that are coated with a sticky substance. And they sell them in bulk for greenhouses, and they're mounted on sticks, and you put them on the plant. Aphids are attracted to the color yellow. Boom, they get on the sticky surface, and it serves two purposes. First, it kills the aphids, which is very satisfying, but you can also monitor the traps. If you see all of a sudden one of the traps is really covered, then you know you got a problem, and on a nice day, you take your plants out and hose them down again. The other thing you can do is mail order beneficial insects, not ladybugs. Ladybugs are problematic in a greenhouse. They fly into all the electrical outlets. But there's a creature called the green lacewing, and you order these in the egg stage, and they come on little cards, and then you just sit them throughout the greenhouse. When the eggs hatch, out will come what are called aphid lions. these baby lacewings that are amazing creatures. They look like little lobsters, little dragons. And each one of these aphid lions will eat 50 aphids a day. So they are the most effective, beneficial insect that there is against aphids. Then they'll go into a pupal stage, and then you'll see the adults, which are beautiful, like fairy-like little green flying guys. And those guys will then eat pollen and nectar from your plants. They'll lay more eggs. So you get a big order of eggs to start with, carded eggs. And as long as there's pollen and nectar plants in your greenhouse, and as long as there's aphids, these insects will keep it squeaky clean.
Well, that's wonderful advice and great suggestions. And I think I'll be better armed this year than I was last year.
And perfect timing, because this hits a lot of people, Tom. So thank you.
Thank you so much for your help, Mike. I appreciate it. I love your show. Keep it up, man.
Take care.
You too.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and reveal that, no, I was not lucky enough to visit France again so soon. Instead, you are listening to a very special hand-selected encore edition of a show we originally aired in 2015 while I take my first true sabbatical in 18 years, and we could just not bear to edit out the references to the south of France and the City of Lights. But don't go telling your friends that McGrath must have become doubly French because he's taken off July and August just yet, because we'll be right back with these secret to a great-looking lawn and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hard-working hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, this is the time of year to repair or install a new cool season lawn. It ain't going to work in the spring, but it will work for you now. We'll also tell you what to do if your lawn is so wet that your mower came with a personal flotation device. But that's after lots more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Yvette, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I am just fine, Yvette. How are you?
I cannot complain.
Well, sure you could, but nobody wants to listen. With your name, I feel like I should be saying bonjour, you know.
Bonjour.
Yeah.
I think that's the only French I know.
Okay. Well, you know, I just got back, and really the people over there are so nice, it's the only French you need to know.
So very good.
Where is this, Yvette?
Well, I live in East Oak Lane in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I just bought a property a few months back. Over the summer, I was working on the garden and the surrounding grounds. And to my chagrin, I noticed that I had numerous holes in the ground. And we tried to figure out what the holes were because they were a little larger than ant holes. Then we noticed that there were bees flying in and out of the hole. And we were trying to figure out what can we do. Are these dangerous bees? Are they honeybees? Is it good for the grounds? Or should I spray something to get rid of them? And will they come back again next spring?
And what time of year was it that you saw the bees being active?
They were active between March and April.
Okay, perfect. So what you have are what are called ground nesting native bees. Some people will call them, quote, digger bees. They are solitary bees. That is, they each live in their own little house. They are native. They're not honeybees, which are originally native to Africa and which will always live in large colonies, preferably a hive. And if you were telling me about this now, in late summer, I'd be worried that they were yellow jackets, which were ground nesting wasps. But in the spring, these are America's greatest pollinators. These are bees that do so much great pollination work. They pollinate native plants. They pollinate our flowers, our fruit trees. They're totally harmless. They don't sting. And they are wonderful to have around. They're truly one of nature's miracles. And if you don't mind them, the best thing you can do is leave them alone. Because if you're a gardener, having ground nesting native bees in the spring ensures that you will have the maximum number of flowers and fruits on your plant. Each one is like a little gardener. Really taking care of your plants. And as you notice, they are also ephemeral. They're only around for like a couple of weeks, and then they seem to disappear.
And that's what happened. They did eventually disappear, so we haven't seen them for a month or so. But,
yeah, they are. They're not only harmless, they're one of the most beneficial insects that we have. People talk about native plants all the time. Well, these are our native bees. There's hundreds of different species. You're familiar with some of them. You just don't think of them in those terms. Carpenter bees, bumblebees, the squash bees you find in squash flowers all the time. Well, they're just the tip of the iceberg. There are literally hundreds of species. So they're totally harmless. They are ephemeral. They're just around for a while. All they do is pollinate. They have never stung. And sometimes they return. Sometimes if you change the landscape, they don't. But they are absolutely harmless.
Well, that is very helpful, Mike, because I was very nervous. But I feel much more comfortable now. So thank you so much for your help. I greatly appreciate it.
You don't have a problem. You've got beneficials.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Great.
And where is Jeff great?
I am in Nashville, Tennessee.
We're hearing from a lot of our friends down in Nashville lately. Always a pleasure. What can we do you for?
I have a commercial lawn service on the side down here. Been doing that for a long time. And over the years, people have asked me to do different things that I didn't have experience with. So I've learned a lot of things over the last 10 or 12 years that I've been doing it. And one of the things that we've started doing for folks is seeding and aerating and fertilizing in the fall. And had pretty good results doing that for folks and supplementing those things with weed and feed treatments in the spring and early summer. But one of the toughest things I'm encountering is getting grass to grow in shaded areas. I've tried grass that likes shade more than Kentucky 31 tall fescue, which is what we use on most lawns.
Mm-hmm.
I tried the creeping red fescue and turf type fescue, and both of those seeds are considerably more expensive than the standard Kentucky 31. But I'm just having trouble getting stuff to grow in kind of the slightly more dry, shaded areas, and the wear of the lawnmowers on those areas significantly worsens the ability to grow grass well in
gotcha.
Those spots. And I was wondering what we might be able to do.
Okay, so you're in Nashville, but it sounds like all of your clients have cool season lawns.
They're largely fescue, and then from what I can tell, they're fescue in the shaded areas. There's just not enough of it.
Now, there's a couple of rules here. One is that you do need fine fescues in the shade. Turf-type tall fescue is a great grass, but it's not as shade-tolerant. And you mentioned creeping red fescue, I think. There are a whole group of what are called the fine fescues. And some of them are better for dry shade, and some of them are better for wet shade. Now, your dry shade is caused by trees?
Yes.
So here's the deal. In a normal situation, in other words, you got 4 or 5 hours of sun a day, it's a somewhat shady spot, but the shade is being thrown by buildings or some other natural area, then you want to have your fine fescue there, and you want to feed it less than your other grasses, and you want to water it less than your other grasses. Because a grass that's growing in true shade is not going to use a lot of nutrients or water. It's growing very slowly. It's not getting as much sun. So if you overfeed it or overwater it, you'll work against yourself. The opposite is true when you have the dry shade of trees. You realize, of course, that the shade cast by trees is limiting the amount of grass you can grow. But think about what's sure. going on underground with the roots of those trees. Those roots are sucking up water, sucking up nutrients. Trees are bullies. Trees get the first shot. So counterintuitively, when you're planting fine fescues around trees, look up at the branches of the trees. The root system is going to go out at least as far as the furthest mm-hmm. branch, maybe 2 or 3 times as far. So you think about that root competition, and so here's an area of lawn that needs extra water and maybe a little bit of extra food at the right times of year, which if you're growing cool season grasses, just feeding in the spring and just feeding in the fall. But one rule that's true for shade-loving grasses, no matter what you're doing, is you cut them even higher. Shade-loving grasses need to be 3.5 inches high after they're cut. They need that extra solar panel area to capture enough sunlight to get alive. So if you cut these fine fescues down to 2 inches, they're going to die off because there wasn't that much sun to begin with, and you just cut their sun in half. So
I try to keep everyone's lawn maintained. I try to talk with them and make sure they understand that it always looks better when we maintain the lawn at a higher cut, and it's also it seems to benefit the turf, and tell them if they're going to make the investment of seeding and aerating, fertilizing, putting pre-emergent and fertilizer out in the spring, to go ahead and have it cut up higher as well, because it's going to give you a better return on your investment.
3.5 inches is the minimum for a grass in shade. And don't forget that these are clumping grasses, the fescues. So it is perfectly natural, normal, and necessary to spread some matching seed every year or two.
Okay.
And that's how you keep the lawn nice in those areas. And to tell you the truth, you do all those things, Jeff, you don't need pre-emergent. The lawn will take care of itself. All you got to do for grass is give it what it needs, and it'll show you what a tough plant it is.
Perfect.
All right. Good luck, man.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you for making it, Jeff.
Have a good one.
1-888-346-9499. Stacy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Stacy, how are you?
I'm fine. It's a beautiful day.
And where is it a beautiful day for Stacy?
It is a beautiful day in Leesport, Pennsylvania.
All right. What can we do for Stacy in Leesport?
I heard you talking last week or the week before about treatment for Japanese beetles. And BGT, BTG, but there was no mention that I heard during that information about milky spore. And I wondered how the two kind of work together or are at opposite ends of whatever.
Well, that's a great question. And the question has not yet been answered because one of the organic controls that you mention is so brand new, we're still learning about some of its properties. People who've listened to the show or just know about organic gardening know that there are many species of a naturally occurring soil-dwelling creature that goes under the total name Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT. The old original BT that kills caterpillars that eat the sprayed leaves, that's been around for 50, 60 years. But there are thousands of BTs that have been isolated, and every once in a while, a scientist finds out what they're good about. And just this year, Gardens Alive has the exclusive on this. There is a new form of BT called BTG for Galleria, and it comes in two forms. Very much like the original BTK for caterpillars, it comes in a form you can spray on the leaves of your roses, grapevines, cherry trees. And as soon as the Japanese beetles start eating, they will die. So that's a very straightforward use of BT. It's very similar to the one that works on caterpillars. It just works on beetles. But they also found that they can just play with the formulation a little bit. And there is one that you can apply to the soil after the beetles are done feeding that will destroy the grubs eating away at your lawn underground. Mm-hmm. So that's very straightforward. Beetles eat sprayed leaves, they die. Grubs consume roots of your lawn that has a little of this BTG attached to it, and they also die. The difference between that and milky spore is a naturally occurring soil organism as well, native to Japan and other parts of Asia, and it's the reason that Japanese beetles are not a problem in Japan, because there has always been this naturally occurring soil organism there keeping their numbers down. So a lot of Americans don't use milky spore correctly, and some fault goes to the stores because they put it on sale in the spring. And if you apply this milky spore powder to the soil in the spring, nothing will happen because the soil is too cold and the grubs are already coming up. They're not eating anymore. They did all their eating in the fall. But right now is the perfect time of year to use milky spore. You would apply it according to the package directions. You do a checkerboard pattern on your lawn. You water it in. Mm-hmm. And then when the baby beetle grubs start to eat the roots of your lawn, they ingest this milky spore powder. But instead of just killing them, like the BTG does, it kills them and then turns their bodies into little milky spore factories. So if you've just got a few beetle grubs in your soil, I would try the BTG. If you had a tremendous number of Japanese beetles eating your roses and maybe your lawn wasn't in good shape or it was wet most of the year, that's the perfect year for there to be lots of grubs. And then you would try milky spore. You wouldn't try the two of them together because milky spore requires a live host. Now, admittedly, the host doesn't stay alive very long, but it needs to be alive in the beginning. And if you get the timing right and the conditions are right, the soil temperature is right, milky spore will spread throughout your lawn thanks to using the bodies of the beetle grubs it's killed. And lawns that were treated correctly and all the right conditions fell into place are still grub-free 20, 30 years later.
I have beetle mania here.
So yeah. You had a lot of Japanese beetles, and you think there's a lot of females laying eggs in your turf?
Well, there are a lot fewer because I go out on a hunt every single day with soapy water. but there's so many. I'm shocked at how many I have this year because I have put Milky Spore down in the fall the last 2 years, but I haven't done the whole yard because it's an acre. I concentrated more on like the living area and also where the grass was really in bad shape.
Well, I think you just answered your own question then. If you've done Milky Spore 2 years in a row, I would suggest you try the BTG. I know the liquid form you spray on the plants for the adults is called Betelgeuse. I'm not sure exactly what they call the ground version. But if you go to Gardens Alive, you'll see it. You'll be able to read about it. And normally we don't recommend companies or anything like that, and Gardens Alive does support our question of the week, but they helped develop this, and they are the exclusive supplier of this for this year and maybe a couple years to come. But if Milky Spore wasn't giving you good results, I would definitely try the BTG and see what happens. But if you do this, I want to report next year.
Okay, good. Great. Yep. I'll call back.
Okay, good luck.
All right. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Ludington Library in Lower Merion on Wednesday evening, October 4th, at the Lower Makefield Township Building on Saturday, October 28th, and I'll deliver the keynote address at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanic Garden in Pittsburgh during their annual Native Plant and Sustainability Conference on Saturday, October 14th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with why we're talking about cool season lawns right now and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to a very special encore edition of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, chasse and chatons. In just a little bit, we will get to the question of the week, explaining why this is the week for you to repair, reseed, or replant a cool season lawn if you want to have turf grass success. We're also going to take lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Judy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Judy. How are you today?
Real good, thank you. It's really fun to be talking to you.
Oh, we'll take care of that soon enough. So where are you?
I'm in Wilmington, Delaware.
Very good. Delaware, the small wonder. What can we do for Judy in Wilmington?
I've got a bad case of voles.
Well, you should talk to your doctor about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really plentiful this year. I think I've always had them, but if I ever saw them, it was a rare occasion.
Yes, that's
now,
true.
Every time I go outside, I'm seeing them run around.
Really? Now, that's highly unusual. So just for those who don't know, I always like to do this little clarification. There are two underground creatures that can be problematic in the landscape. Moles, M-O-L-E-S, live completely underground, make raised tunnels in lawns, and don't eat any plant material. Voles, V-O-L-E-S, are little mousy, shrew-like creatures that live kind of half underground, half above ground. They make runs in lawns, and they eat enormous amounts of plant material, mostly underground, mostly spring bulbs in the roots of plants.
Yeah.
So you have voles.
Yes, I do.
And are they eating your plants?
I haven't noticed anything gone. Something's interrupting my tomatoes, but I don't think it's the voles.
Interrupting your tomatoes. Now, that's one of the more interesting phrases we've heard on this show. What the heck does that mean, Judy?
It means I go out and there's a bite out of the tomato that's just about ready to pick.
That's evil squirrels.
Okay.
They don't like tomatoes, but they take a bite out of each one just to frustrate us.
Yes.
Now, what you can do is you can buy a motion-activated sprinkler and aim it at the garden. And when the evil squirrels go near your tomatoes, they get chased off by cold water.
That would be fun.
It's very entertaining to watch.
Yes.
Now, you'd say you go outside and you see voles running around?
Yes.
Tell me what you see.
Well, they are little mouse-sized. They're a dark color. And the Pachycandra has kind of overflowed
the walkway. Yeah, no, they love living under that. Yeah.
And they can just dash right across the pathway. They hear me coming and then they're scurrying.
You know, for some reason, I just think, you know, if they're not damaging plants, this is an opportunity. Can we capture them and dress them up into little clothes and teach them to play soccer or something against each other?
I do have a team, I'll tell you. There must be a lot of them.
Well, I'm tempted not to do anything if they're not really harming anything, but your two options would be mouse traps baited with peanut butter.
Did it.
And?
They like the peanut butter.
You didn't have the trap set.
Yes, I did. Yeah. And they got the peanut butter and the trap never snapped.
Huh.
Six of them around.
Okay.
So that was my first.
Okay. And one thing I want to mention before we move off that, if you do that outside, you have to put little boxes over the trap with holes cut out in the bottom so birds don't accidentally get hurt.
So then the only
thing I'm going to suggest, well, there's two things I can suggest. One is you get one of these castor oil products, either dry pellets or liquid sprays. They're available online and at bigger garden centers, bigger independent garden centers. Mole Away, Mole Med, Molotov cocktail. They're dried or liquefied forms of castor oil, and they impart a scent to the soil that moles and voles don't like, although we don't smell it. That's one of the easiest things you can do.
Oh, I'll do that next, yeah.
Otherwise, you might want to go online, and they make now these electrified mouse traps. We were talking about one on a previous show for larger vermin that's called the rat zap. There are also mouse zap. And these are run with AA batteries, and they have little holes in them, and they have a green light. And when a creature goes inside to investigate the dark hole, which mice and voles both do, they get electrocuted right away. And then the red light goes on, so you dump them in the trash. You don't have to handle them or anything like that. You just reset it again.
Oh, okay. That's unusual.
Yeah, well, you know, life is unusual. It's unusual to have voles running around playing real football in your front yard. Yeah.
I know. And like, the things I'm reading about, it seems like they might just chase them to somebody else's yard. You know?
Well, that's fine. We can't solve the world's problems, Judy. All right, Judy?
Super. I like these tips. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
With you.
Good luck to you.
All right, thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Andy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I am just fine, Andy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I have a question about shredded leaves.
Sure. Where are you, man?
I live in Pittman, New Jersey, which is in South Jersey, about maybe 20 miles southeast of Philadelphia.
Got you on my map. What can we do you for?
Well, every year I know the value of leaves. I save leaves in the fall. I have a large fenced-in bin where I accumulate a lot of leaves. I live on almost an acre of ground. And what I was doing formerly was digging them into my vegetable garden. I have a large vegetable garden, but it's really a lot of work, and it seems like I'm doing it backwards. I'm putting the leaves in the bottom and then expecting, you know, the nutrients from the leaves to go up. So I know that shredded leaves are the way to go. My problem is, by this time of year, when I'm getting ready or in the spring to incorporate those leaves into my garden, what I've got is a large mound of wet, matted leaves. And I wanted to know if you were aware of any shredder, composter, mulcher, machine that might be able to handle that, you know, wet, matted material.
Well, okay, so first of all, you never want to bury carbonaceous material in your garden. Burying leaves or wood chips or sawdust in the soil is counterproductive. It's going to tie up soil nutrients. It's going to tie up nitrogen. It's going to stunt your plants. My philosophy is to try to imitate nature as much as possible. And nature drops everything on the surface, dead trees, fallen leaves. Nature don't go burying nothing. So neither should you. Nature also doesn't go tilling up the soil. And neither should you, because it creates nothing but weed woes. So the honest answer, as you probably already know, Andy, is to shred them as they come down. Whole leaves just take forever to break down. Whole leaves take 4 to 5 years to break down when they're all piled up. I mean, of course they're going to break down, or else the woods would be 100 feet deep with, you know,
with
leaves. But when you don't reduce the particle size, they just sit there. And as you've noticed, they can mat together when they get wet and do a darn good imitation of a tarp.
And yeah, they're pretty thick. Right?
Yeah, and that smothers plants if you use them or let them lay on the lawn, and it also makes it difficult to use them.
Yeah, what I've been trying to do with them is I would put them in my compost pile and mix them with a nitrogen source, you know, but still, it was a backbreaking work to get those things.
Right. So what I suggest you do right now, all the home stores have these things on sale. Go out and buy an electric leaf blower that has a reverse setting and a bag to put on your shoulder. Don't ever use the blower. Use the sucker. And there's no bending. There's no raking. You suck the leaves up while you're standing up. They go through an impeller built into the machine. They drop into your shoulder bag, then you put them in the compost bin, or then you can even use those shredded leaves as mulch to protect.
Yeah, that was my other question I had for you, is the best way to put shredded leaves on and around my vegetable plants. And I grow a wide variety, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, beans.
Just a 2-inch layer on the surface, baby. It'll keep weeds down, it'll slowly break down, it'll keep moisture in the soil. Earthworms will come running. You'll see little earthworms with their suitcases packed, dragging their children to live under that leaf litter. With your wet leaves, you got two choices. You can either just dedicate an area and pile them up and let them slowly compost down. They will eventually compost. Or spread them out, get them as dry as you can. And then what I would do is borrow somebody's riding mower that has a bagging attachment, because that's the safe way to do it. You don't want to suck up wet leaves into an electric leaf blower vacuum. But a big riding mower with a bagging attachment will suck those wet leaves up and shred them for you, and then you're done. But this fall, this is the perfect timing, man. No excuses. These things cost $50-$60, and they last 10, 12 years. The leaves take up 1/20th the space once they're shredded. They turn into compost super fast. It's a win-win-win-win-win-win situation.
Okay.
All right, Andy?
I really enjoy your show, and thank you so much for your help today.
All right. Be brave with your leaves.
I'll do it. Thanks, Mike.
Take care. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. last call to plant a real cool season lawn this summer. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with this week's first of several questions.
I'd be happy to. Gretchen in Bethlehem, PA writes, "We removed our entire front lawn this spring when we had our gutters routed underground to carry rainwater further away from the house. It wasn't much of a lawn, riddled with weeds and very uneven. We replanted using a Pennsylvania mix, grass seed accelerator, and lawn starter soil, and now have quite a few weeds. My husband wants to treat the lawn to eliminate the weeds. In scouring your A to Z garden answers section, I see that proper cutting height, wise watering, and corn gluten are the best defense against weeds in a well-established lawn. But our lawn is still in its adolescent phase, hopefully on its way to becoming well-established, but not there yet. I have been hand-pulling a lot of weeds and trying to persuade my husband to not use chemicals. What do you suggest?"
Well, Gretchen didn't much care for my suggestion when I emailed it to her. But the only thing that's really going to work here is a do-over. Now, they did the right thing by fixing their drainage. That was probably the cause of the previous lawn's problems. But they did it at the wrong time of year. If you're going to tear up a lawn in a cool season grass region like the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania, and you want to replant it right away, you should have the work done in the summer.
Mike, didn't Iowa State turf grass professor Dr. Nick Christians once tell you that planting mid-August through mid-September was the key to having a weed-free cool season lawn?
Oh, absolutely. Nick even said you can make 18 mistakes after that and still have a good-looking lawn if you plant it in late summer. But if you sow that seed in the spring, you're always going to have a sea of weeds. And you can spray those weeds all you want with whatever you want, and it's not going to change the fact that there's probably not much grass out there. And what grass there is had a very poor childhood education.
And what is grass seed accelerator?
I think it's like a flux capacitor. Anyway, they can either tear up the lawn and replant now, which is the absolute perfect time of year to do so, or they can spray and pull and curse and fume for a couple of seasons and then finally realize that they have to tear it up and replant it. They already did the right thing fixing the drainage problem, and I hope they do the right thing here. Killing weeds will never grow good grass, but growing good grass will always kill weeds.
Ooh, how poetic. Well, we move on to Mike in Kansas City, who writes, "Due to an exceptionally wet spring, my neighbors and I have areas of lawn that will not dry out and can't be cut. Mowers simply sink. It is apparent that there are underground springs being fed by our heavy rains. What can be done to help this landscape?"
Well, first off, I'd say the poor drainage seems to be a distinct possibility here.
Gee, you think?
Yep. As Jeff Foxworthy might say, if your lawnmower came with a life jacket, you might have poor drainage. Anyway, there's two big options here. One is to install what are called drain tiles. They carry excess water away underground so that the grass can dry out between waterings, which is crucial for having a good-looking lawn.
Okay, like the people who sent that first question did.
Well, they actually buried pipes to take away their gutter water. But that could also be part of this guy's problem. Poorly designed gutters can cause a lot of drainage issues. That's why the builder who put the last addition onto our house years ago told me that he routinely installs buried piping to carry gutter water away from the house and the yard. And you're correct, the situations and solutions are very similar.
Then what's the other option?
Transforming at least some of this lawn into a rain garden, a regraded area that channels excess water to a series of well-designed plantings. It's a great solution that allows you to still have a nice lawn area while adding a landscape garden feature that attracts birds, butterflies, toads, pollinators, beneficial insects, and it looks really nice, too.
And finally, we have a non-question. You actually get a lot of these, don't you?
Yeah, but it would be boring if all we did was told you so's.
Ken in Norman, Oklahoma writes, I wanted you to know that I finally took your advice and discontinued using chemicals on my lawn this season. I fired the lawn chemical people I had been using. The rep was not happy. Then waited as the weather warmed and the Bermuda grass began greening up. Some weeds also greened up, but not that many. Early in the season, I patrolled the yard once a week, digging up the offenders. Now I do this maybe every 2 or 3 weeks. Doesn't take much time at all, maybe 15 to 20 minutes. My grass is beautiful, thick, and green, and I have more pocket change. Thank you, Mike, for your advice.
Well, thank you, Ken, for making the change and reporting the results. Well, that sure was some good advice about proper planting of a future weed-free lawn, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to reroute one of my gutters into my pinball room if I don't get out of this studio. Alexis, that's shocking. Absolutely shocking. Okay. Anyway, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as you include your location, at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location, especially if you're certain that we don't need it. Or visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you live, but where you will find the answers to all of those garden questions you were going to ask us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz waters our website wisely. Weed-free Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Al Banks always wears a life jacket when he edits the show. Our indomitable intern, Stephen Dre Hobel, seems to drain reasonably well. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and, you know, if I seem a little distant today, it's because my brain is still on vacation, sitting in a little sidewalk cafe on the streets of Paris on a breezy summer afternoon, sipping a glass of fine red wine, mispronouncing French phrases and skewering snails by the dozen. Garcon! Another round of these misbegotten mollusks. Heavy on the butter and double on the garlic, sees vous play. Do you want more beneficial bugs in your landscape and less poison ivy? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss those topics, the amazing fig tree wasp and pruning in the fall, as our series of summer specials marches on.